Good morning. Thank you all for getting up so early to join us on Monday. I'll try and ease us into our Monday morning. This is a statistics section, but I am not going to talk very much about equations or Greek letters, so it should all give our brains a chance to wake up just a little bit. What I am going to talk about this morning is something that Lance and I have started to call a thought exercise, trying to think of a framework to superimpose on the existing health disparities literature to come up with a way to synthesize and organize the measurements that are out there and see if there's a way to get to a place where we feel like we're comparing apples and apples when we compare the conclusions that are drawn from different studies, different regions over time, because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is evaluate the performance of policies, programs, organizations that are all aimed at reducing and eliminating health disparities. And the only way that we can do that is if we can actually compare the results from different studies. And right now, we have a wide variety of studies that are all kind of telling us different things. So that's where we started. I have no relationships to disclose. And this is work with Lance Waller, who's a fellow, who's a professor at Emory University with me. So we started with two basic questions. How do we define health disparities? Now, fortunately for us, the National Institutes of Health have provided us with a very nice definition, it's very clear. But once you start thinking about how to implement that definition, there becomes a question of how are we going to define difference? And how are we going to set a threshold for when that difference suddenly counts as unequal or unfair impact of something. And I have a few examples of how not to define a difference. The Environmental Protection Agency was fairly transparent in a report on air toxicity that they hadn't really decided how they were going to define a difference. And a CDC report on 11 different points of how to measure health disparities has this fairly long section on what doesn't count as a difference. And I don't mean to pick on these two or on other organizations who are struggling with this topic. In fact, I really agree with what the CDC has to say here, that there is no one single answer or one single metric that's going to do the trick. And we really do need to think about the context of the problem, the context of the research, and the priorities that have been placed on different pieces of the disparities picture. And in fact, that's just what was argued in a handful of recent articles in the American Journal of Epidemiology. Started with Harper et al., they compared seven different disparities measures applied to lung cancer incidence. And what they found was, depending upon which metric they used, not only the magnitude, but also the direction of the disparity that they were measuring changed. And so in an invited commentary, Lynn Messer said that there needs to be a clearer explanation of the measurements we're using to measure health disparities, and there needs to be much clearer specifications of the assumptions that are going into the methods that we're using. And so that's essentially what Lance and I are calling for as well. And so as a first attempt to provide a framework that people could use to more clearly and transparently discuss their methods and their motivations, we started by thinking of four very broad categories that health disparities measures could fall into. Now, in the health disparities research or literature, you hear a lot of debate about absolute disparities versus relative disparities. And people have a tendency to argue about which is really capturing the better picture or the more accurate picture. But we wanted to expand our typology to include two other categories, association measures and causal inference. Now, causal inference in particular is a fairly new field, as is health disparities research, and so there's not a lot of specific examples of these methods being applied to this problem, but we wanted to include it for completion because it is starting to trickle down into other fields of application. And then, of course, within each of the four broad categories, you can think of examples of specific point estimates and measures, and then elements of inference that can be drawn about those estimates. Now, within each of our four categories, we wanted to think about the different questions that researchers need to address. And the first one is what data are available and what data are required. There are a lot of implicit assumptions that go into measurement choices. For example, if we're conducting a statistical test, there are all kinds of assumptions. Perhaps we're using parametric assumptions. If we're making modeling decisions, if we're doing a t-test or ANOVA, we're implying that the sample sizes in the groups are similar or the variance structures are similar. And whenever we teach introductory classes, we always teach our students that it's good statistical practice to check these assumptions and to discuss violations of those assumptions. But when you go through the health disparities literature and many other fields of applied statistics, these often get glossed over. And we think that it's an important part of painting a picture and bolstering the conclusions that you're drawing. Now, the next question that we thought of is what kinds of answers were being sought? And again, in the recent AJE articles, Harper et al. Said this much more eloquently, that attempts to evaluate trends in health disparities require judgments about which conception of disparity is important for the question at hand. And in some cases, this may be very clear. In some cases, you may be asking to compare the incidence rates of breast cancer among different race groups versus the survival rates once breast cancer has been contracted among race groups. And it's fairly clear that those are two different research questions that require two different analytical methods. But other times it may be slightly more subtle. It may be less clear from the research question if the goal is to quantify risk across various comparison groups or if the goal is to quantify risk for individuals within a heightened risk subgroup. And so we feel that this is a really important question to be very clear about how you're prioritizing the pieces of the health disparity you're trying to measure. Then, of course, we also have to ask who is the audience. Hopefully, this doesn't completely drive our research agenda, but we do need to keep in mind, are we drawing conclusions for a lay audience, and are we trying to put together a press release? Are we trying to draw conclusions for policymakers to help guide them in their decisions? Or are we drawing conclusions for a more scholarly audience and a peer-reviewed publication? And all of those audiences are going to understand different kinds of measurement techniques and are going to need different explanations of the motivations behind those decisions. And then lastly, sort of the big money question, when is one class of tools better suited to a problem than another? Lance and I don't have a very good answer to this question yet, but we're hoping that the more we think about this paper and the more we talk about it with audiences like this, we may get some useful suggestions. In a perfect world, it would be really nice to have a set of guidelines for what kinds of answers are best suited to questions such as, should we be using a relative disparity or an absolute disparity here? And what story are we really telling based on those decisions that we're making? And so, going back and thinking about our four broad categories and then each of the questions we wanted to ask within each of our categories, we conducted a literature review and we started thinking of ways to organize the results of that literature review. Now, this is just the first few lines of a table that takes up about a page and a half in our paper, but one of the ways that we started organizing conceptually our results was we started thinking about what are the primary outcome measures of interest that are getting counted here. And so we thought of another set of categories where we thought of outcome comparisons, like you see here, things like actual mortality rates, survival rates, incidence rates. We thought you could also categorize things as access comparisons. Do people have regular appointments with their physician? Do they have a pharmacy that they can go to get their prescription medications? Questions like that. Environmental precursors, things like the EPA article about air toxicity or clean water, access to potable water, things like that. And then lastly, individual behavior questions. Are people drinking, smoking, exercising, et cetera? And so again, this is just the first few lines, examples of some cancer papers that we looked at. And what we were curious was, has there been a default method that is favored within these niches? Are all of the cancer studies relying on a specific measurement, whereas all of the environmental questions are concentrating on another measurement? And we really didn't find that to be happening. As you can see here, we organized it by data used and required. And I should clarify, statisticians have a tendency to think of population versus sample. And that's not really the way I'm using population here. It's probably somewhat imprecise. Aggregate might be a better word to use. But what we thought about was a lot of these questions rely on data aggregated across groups, perhaps economic data from a census tract, whereas other questions rely on individual level data. Perhaps you went to a hospital and looked at an individual patient's medical record, or perhaps you administered a survey to an individual to ask about their health behaviors. So that's really how we were dividing up the different kinds of data that was used. Then we categorized according to the four groups in our typology, whether it was an association, relative, absolute, or causal inference. and then the actual specific measure that they reported within their paper. Now, the one thing that we did want to note is that the category of association measures can be tricky, and it's really one of the places where it's critical to be clear about the question that you're trying to answer, because an association measure can come from regression, and it may be looking at the association between a demographic variable and an outcome of interest to identify risk groups, or it may be an association measure because you're adjusting for a race group or another at-risk demographic variable when you're actually measuring a relative difference, such as an odds ratio or a hazard ratio. And so it's really clear when you're using these different methods to define what it is you're getting out of the method. Now, another way that we thought about organizing our literature review was going back to all of those questions that we wanted to ask within each category. So again, a very abbreviated version of a table in our paper. If you start with the first category of absolute difference and you just take simple difference as an example of a measurement within that category, obviously the question that's addressed there is, do rates, proportions, means, whatever you're looking at actually differ? Now, the questions that are not addressed could perhaps be infinite, but the most immediate ones are, we're not addressing any level of statistical significance or inference, and we're assuming that whatever we're measuring is actually meaningful on its own, that there aren't other covariates we've omitted or that are adjusting or confounding this relationship. So a natural extension of this method would be to adjust for or standardize for other potential covariates or to conduct a test for statistical significance. Staying within this example, typically simple differences rely on population or aggregate level data, and the assumption is that the difference that you have measured is comparable in a meaningful way across the group. Now, it seems like a fairly straightforward assumption, but again, it's not something that's talked about very transparently in the literature. And one of the things that's happening implicitly when you use a simple difference is you're implying that any error in your measurement is small enough that the difference you've measured is meaningful, that the difference you've measured isn't getting washed out by any measure of uncertainty. And you're implying that particularly if you're reporting a simple difference without any level of inference attached to that simple difference. And so we went through all of our different categories and we thought about things like that. What's being implied by the conclusions that are being drawn using this method? And then, of course, a complication or a limitation of trying to extend this method is that if we do adjust for covariates or if we standardize, it may not have the same effect across the groups we're interested in comparing. And so table two goes through a lot of different examples of measures that you can use in the four categories that we thought of. And so just to conclude, what we were hoping, and again, we are still, this is a work, very much a work in progress, but what we were hoping was that if we can think of a structure on which to hang a lot of this research that's happening, perhaps we can encourage more explicit and transparent references to the motivation behind the techniques we've chosen, the assumptions that are implied by those techniques, and then we can draw conclusions much more clearly, and then we can know if we're comparing apples and apples. If a study that was done in 1990 and was repeated in the year 2000 used different methods, we can't draw a conclusion about that disparity and about whether it's changing or growing or decreasing or whether a method aimed at reducing it is working, because we're not comparing apples and apples. And right now, the language that gets used in a lot of these conclusions is so vague that it's a little tricky to determine which studies out there are actually comparable to each other. So that's all I have. I have some references for people who are interested, especially the AJE articles I couldn't recommend highly enough. And thank you very much. I'd be happy to take questions. Assuming we have time for questions. I think that it's not always true that none of them are working, because the assumption behind the prevalence, let me think about how I want to word this. Perhaps you want to give a brief summary of what your findings are.
Well, it's an outcome decreases in prevalence from all of the differences in experiencing it, and the increase in all of the differences in avoiding it tend to decrease
I think it is true that you do need to ask that question, is the difference we're detecting dependent upon the prevalence? But I think it assumes that interventions aimed at disparity measures affect everyone the same. And some of those interventions do. Some of those interventions are based on the philosophy that a rise of high grade is all votes. But some are aimed more precisely at the at-risk groups. And I think in that case, the prevalence doesn't necessarily determine the difference that you're measuring. Does that answer your question?
Well, I think